Raleigh, North Carolina. It's The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack, a podcast dedicated to the show Lost on ABC. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hey everybody, welcome to The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack. My name is Jay.
And I'm Jack!
And welcome to the show. Today is going to be one of our retrospective focus shows where we're going to look back on a few episodes, four episodes to be exact. So we have What Kate Did. We're going to find out what Kate did. The 23rd Psalm, Echo's first flashback.
Hold on a second. Why are you laughing at What Kate Did?
We'll get into it in our discussion. Then we have The Hunting Party and Fire Plus Water. That we're going to talk about. And we have a special guest joining us for this episode, none other than world-renowned Lost blogger and founder and director of Cancer Gets Lost, Joe Pinionated. So we'll be very excited to have her on the show with us as we go over these episodes and talk to her and see what's going on in her world. So we're very excited to have her on. But before we get into that, we want to thank the people that make this show possible, and that's you, the listeners. Yes, the listeners through Patreon.com. You can become a patron today and support this show. And we already have over 100 people that are patrons to the show, which is awesome. And you can become one as well. And I think we're at $719 a month. And our next goal is at $1,000 to do a live married man show, which should be a lot of fun. Right, Jack? That should be a good time.
It should be a lot of fun. I have to do it every week, and it's really not that much fun for me, but I'm sure the rest of people will enjoy it.
And there's different tiers that you can pledge at. I mean, really, pledge whatever you can. And again, all the shows are free, so you don't have to pledge a fee, but if you can, it helps make these shows possible. So thank you for all 103 patrons that have done and pledged to the show. If you would like to become one today, you can do that at patreon.com/JayandJack. That's patreon.com/JayandJack. And check out all of our shows. For the people that listen to the Lost Podcast has always been free. But for about 5 years, we did exclusive shows for our exclusive feed, and that's no more because of Patreon. So you can listen to The Leftovers with Jay and Jack. I mean, if you aren't watching The Leftovers this season, for any Lost fan, if you're a Lost fan listening to this show, you need to go watch The Leftovers. Season 2 has been fantastic. If you didn't like Season 1, Season 2 is top-notch. Fantastic. I would argue the best show on TV right now this season. So definitely check it out. We also do Survivor with Jay, Jack, and Colleen. Amazing Race with Jack and Cindy. Sports Talk with Three Stupid Guys. Walking Dead with Three Stupid Guys. The Married Man Show is back, as well as the Ramblecast. But Ramblecast is more when there's not TV or stuff to talk about. So Ramblecast probably more during the Christmas time break here. But either way, check it all out. And we have a whole feed with everything called The Whole Enchilada. Or you can check out all the feeds individually if you'd like to search for them on iTunes. All right, without further ado, let's check in with our good friend, Joe Pinionated. Welcome, Joe! Woo!
Thank you for having me again.
It's always great talking to you, Joe. And honestly, I think anybody listening to the show knows who you are. For those that may not know, do you want to tell them who you are, Joe?
Sure. Wow. Well, that's great for my ego. Thank you very much. Thank you. You can find me online at Joe Pinionated, the word opinionated with a J in front of it. I used to have a fairly successful Lost blog, I suppose, where I do deep dive analysis of weekly episodes of Lost. And then I met these guys. Did I actually meet you in Hawaii in 2010 on the red carpet?
I feel like we met at Comic-Con before.
Comic-Con, thank you. Okay, I thought I had met you before, but I feel like we've known each other for almost 10 years now.
I know.
how they forget so quick.
It's true. And, like one of you, I still have my hair. Anyway.
Oh,
hey, Colleen. I'm just throwing some shade over here.
Colleen's cleaning the house because her mother is visiting this weekend. So.
Oh, well, I would be cleaning too.
Yeah.
But I digress. Anyway, I run a small charity now called Cancer Gets Lost. We channel the fans from different fandoms toward the greater good by auctioning off rare and signed pop culture memorabilia from your favorite shows and films. And right now we actually have a small auction on eBay. You can find all the details on cancergetslost.org. So Lost and the world of Lost, the community, has been very, very, very good to me and beneficial to fundraising for amazing causes. And, you know, allowed us to be to make lifelong friendships like this. It's sort of rather amazing. Here we are in 2015 talking about season two of Lost, which was 10 years ago, and it's still so interesting and so relevant and fascinating, and I just love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the Cancer Get Lost is just an amazing, amazing thing. And really, just every year you come up with great stuff that, you know, that's really neat. And I don't know if you listen to our podcast with Bobby Moynihan, but he was the one that I believe put in the bid for the Dharma Fish Biscuit dispensary.
He won.
Yes, he won. But now he says it's like it's almost like a love hate relationship he has with this thing because it's gigantic and it sits in his living room and he doesn't know like what to do with it.
He sent us a picture of it in his living room and I can see amazing. Where it'd be frustrating.
It's hilarious. He's such a great supporter of the show and of causes and of people like, you know, what you're doing and I'm doing. And he's just a really great guy. And I love that there are people out there who weren't on the show that are famous that love it as much as we do.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
He wanted to be on the show.
Oh, I'm sure. Hurley's long lost brother, whatever. I was
afraid that he said he'd be a log carrying guy. He didn't care.
Yeah, we don't have anything that big in our next auction. I will tell you, though, sort of tease you that Monday in Los Angeles, I'm going by the office of one Damon Lindelof, who has reached out to me with probably the largest single contribution to my charity in the history of Cancer Gets Lost. So,
hey, that's a great deal, but why don't you make that hair joke when you go in there?
Because he wears that. Never mind. I won't even go there, my friend. But anyway, to go back to it, yes, Lindelof has been extremely, and, you know, Carlton too, but in particular, Damon has been tremendous. He's moved offices. He's obviously doing The Leftovers now, and he came across an excess of things related to this show that he is donating and signing, which is just spectacular.
Awesome. Yeah. So. Well, it wouldn't be, because I know he famously has the hatch in his office. It wouldn't be the hatch, would it?
No, I'd be crying with joy.
I mean, I think it's just a big thing. That would be a big thing. But no, it's amazing, and Damon always is so generous and always so giving, and God, what do you think of The Leftovers this year? Leftovers is amazing.
It is phenomenal. It is quite something that a show in its second season, and they had a tabula rasa because they finished with the book content in season one. Yep. It is phenomenal to have a season this stellar in your second round and completely change your setting, almost completely change your cast. I think it's freaking brilliant.
Oh yeah, it's so good. And like and I almost think it like going past the book was almost freeing for Damon and his crew of writers, because it's just now he could kind of make his own like there's the background mythology that he could work with, but now he can make his own universe and story, and it's just every episode is so tight and so driven, and it's really
thought provoking. It's such a spiritual deep show that it sticks with you. It sticks in your gut and in your heart and in your mind. And I've woken up in the middle of the night to think about some of the moral dilemmas and philosophies that they've put forth in the show. And very few shows affect me that way. And I think it is nothing short of brilliance. And I think it should be winning every award, especially the actors. I think it's kind of underrated in that sense. The content, the script is amazing. But Carrie Coon and Regina King this season are off the charts.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I mean, it's top notch. But I almost think it's not really that many people are watching it. You know, comparatively, I don't know if maybe too many people thought the first season was too depressing or whatever and didn't want to come back. But I almost think it's a shame, because I think this is a hidden gem that's like honestly, arguably the best show on TV so far this fall season.
And they got it on HBO because they'll be patient with the smaller audience and know that it'll build and know that you know, with the once it's aired, people will start catching up to it.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, so hopefully, because there was so much just, probably animosity over like Lost when it ended, and or people that were frustrated with it, and, you know, all the fights that Damon had over it. And I hope now that people will see like how amazing this show is, and hopefully Damon will maybe come out of hiding. And it seems like he has a little bit more, because he's had some really like witty commentary that he's given. I don't know if you saw what he said about Justin Theroux or Justin Theroux's character last week.
Spoiler.
Wait, I haven't seen this week's episode yet. I have to wait till Lisa gets back in town. I know something big happens. I know that Damon put out a statement, but I have not read a thing.
It's a hilarious statement.
Okay.
Don't read it till you've seen the episode.
Yeah, don't read it till you've seen the episode. But It's really funny, but it brought me back to like, okay, finally, there we go. Like, cause he's so funny.
Oh my God, he's hilarious. And he's such a nice guy and he feels everything. And that's why I've always admired him. And I think it's actually, I miss him on Twitter, but I get it. I don't know if he'll come back, but I feel like this is a different audience than Lost, even though a lot of us watch it who love Lost. And so I don't see the same frustrations, even though there are less answers, if that makes any sense.
No, yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that it's a different, one, they set proper expectations to begin with, right? Don't go in this thinking you're going to get answers to the mysteries of the show. But I think you brought up earlier in that this show is really about the spiritualness of like human society and what do you do after, you know, if something is as catastrophic as what, you know, the departure was for these people and how does it affect you emotionally, spiritually, mentally? And then how do you cope and deal with that? And it's just, it's more of a, like an exploration of, the human condition.
Absolutely.
So it's similar in that it's top-notch drama quality, and there is mystery in the sense that you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen to these characters, but I think the focus is shifted to like it's really about these people's journey and what happens to them after this thing that was catastrophic.
It sounds like you should do a podcast. Oh wait, you are.
Check it out on iTunes today.
There you go.
but what else is going on in your world? I mean, you're always busy. You're always doing something.
I am always. I'm very busy with Cancer Gets Lost. Yes. I have no complaints there. It's pretty amazing. I am writing about another show called The 100 that I sort of surprisingly fell in love with in its second season and went back and revisited it and started watching and writing about it in the analysis style that I used to with Lost. And I'm just this week actually launched a brand new podcast called Dropship, the 100 podcast, with my friend AJ Mass from ESPN, and that's going to be hitting iTunes this week. And so I'm also experimenting with the world of podcasting, although admittedly I have zero editing skills, so I'm happy to be the color commentator / analyst.
Well, it's a good show. I think it's a good show to because you got me hooked on it. I watched it at Comic-Con, the pilot didn't watch it, but it came back on. You said, you got to watch it. So I watched it and got hooked on it, and now I'm on episode 9 of season 2. And I think it's a good show to podcast about because there's a lot of different stories going on. So
absolutely. It's totally not the show you would think it is when you start it. And I'm just very pleasantly surprised by it, given that it's on the CW and it's exactly opposite of how they presented it in the beginning. And I just love that.
I would agree.
Well, CW is getting some good, like Arrow is fantastic.
Flash
is fantastic.
Agreed.
So it is like there's still the stigma of the CW, but they have some pretty caliber shows now.
I think they are outgrowing their stigma, which with the bold programming, like you said, like the superheroes and, you know, the 100 is very, very dark. Not as dark as Leftovers, because I think that might win. but a different kind of dark, and it also really brings up some interesting philosophical and moral questions, and it's very, you know, the same kind of things that you kind of think about with The Walking Dead, with if the world's at an end, how do you behave and how do you alter your behavior and are you the person that you were meant to be? And so in that sense there's a great depth to it that maybe in the first 4 episodes you don't find, but then it really will get you in the gut.
Now, I guess since we've done a podcast of some sort for 10 years now, the Lost podcast is over 10 years old. So we have some experience. My question, I guess my advice for you would be, to come up with, horribly catchy, intro and theme songs, segue songs throughout the show.
Keyword is horrible.
Yes. Keyword is horrible.
I have been listening to you ramble for 10 years. It's been
lovely. So, do you have any, you know, fun, like, can you unveil some segments that might be on the show for people at home that, you know, are going to tune in when are you going to release it this week?
Well, it's actually, we submitted it to iTunes today. So today's Wednesday. We're hoping it'll be out tonight or tomorrow. We have an amazing, not amazing. We have a lovely, somewhat serious intro that AJ's got the radio voice. AJ's got the experience as a podcast. So we have an amazing graphic that my friend Sarah created.
Awesome.
It's beautiful. It's very much like because this is a drop ship. We wanted a metallic metal that had that reptilian scaly texture to it, like the titles of the 100.
Nice.
We basically have that. We have the intro. We have the podcast. That's all we have so far. I'll work on a theme song. I'm more of a haiku girl.
So it'd be like Def Jam poetry kind of thing? Is that what it's going to be like?
I can drop a beat. Maybe in the podcast. Maybe if I have one of the actors on, we'll sing. I don't know.
Awesome. Well, that's very exciting. And people at home, definitely check it out. I'm sure it's going to be great. And you're a great writer, but we've podcasted with you many times and done many things with you. You're going to do great on this show, so I'm sure it's going to be fantastic.
This is like the best thing ever for my ego. Keep going. Let's talk about Lost.
Perfect.
Let's talk about what Kate did.
Oh, let's, please.
You guys, seriously. I mean, you see what Kate did? All right, so anything else you want to talk about? Are we good to go?
I think we're good to go.
Fantastic. All right. So this is a retrospective focus podcast. So in these, we are looking back on a chunk of episodes from, and now we're in season two. So we have What Kate Did, the 23rd Psalm, The Hunting Party, and Fire Plus Water. What's interesting about this grouping of episodes is this grouping of episodes gets a lot of flack. Like, a lot of people give these episodes a hard time, but watching them, I didn't have that sense of, oh, this is horrible and boring. Like, what did you guys think?
No, I actually, revisiting them, I find more content and interest in these episodes now than I did when they first aired, because I didn't think they were filler at the time, but they were still giving us, you know, filling in backstory. And I feel like I didn't focus the time enough on what was actually happening on the island. And I feel like they really gave us a lot.
Yeah,
I enjoyed them. Because I was a Kate. I've said this before. I was a Kate defender during the whole first run of it. And when you watch these, you go, "All right, Kate, come on, what are you doing?" I get what everybody was seeing. The first, I was just blinded, but
blinded by beauty.
Could have been, but it just. I mean, I still don't think she's as bad as everybody made her out to be, but she did make some blunders.
Well, I think it depends on like where you. It's just there was a lot of. Will she with Jack? Will she with Sawyer? So it may depend where you were on the shipping scale.
I was not a shipper. It didn't matter. I didn't care.
Same.
I didn't either. But I think that's where maybe more of the hate came for Kate.
I didn't hate Kate. I mean, it was unfair. Some in my early writings, but that was 10 years ago. I was a baby. I would just say, now that I actually know Evangeline a little bit through the charity, I feel horrible about saying anything negative, even though it was her character and not her as a person. But I digress.
She is very sweet as a person.
Oh, she's absolutely a lovely human being and just the sweetest little thing. And I say little because I'm 5 feet tall, but she is little. Anyway, and I'm thrilled for her success.
She can climb a tree, though.
She certainly can. She's a total jock. I was going to go back. I mean, I'm going back with the title. What I was going to say was, I was frustrated with the lack of Kate's kick-assness. Like, I feel like I loved what Kate did in the sense that we got the backstory, and I was always curious about it, about why the marshal was obsessed with her, what really made her run. I think they really set the table with this episode for Kate moving forward. It maybe came a season too late for me in terms of this particular flashback for her, but I was frustrated at that point until season 5 with how they used or didn't use Kate. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you brought up a good point as well, is that this backstory that they gave in What Kate Did is almost what we wanted in season 1 in terms of Kate's, because her second flashback in season 2, not Tabula Rasa, whatever. What was her next one? It was the suitcase one. I'm blanking now. But that one was
very
like,
the box where she buries the toys.
Yeah, and then she goes back and we find out why the plane. Like, that was almost like a waste of a flashback, when this one's like really getting into like the origins of her character and why she is the way she is. So I kind of broke down some highlights from What Kate Did. Let me run through them and see what else we want to pick out about this episode. And it's kind of in order of what happened in the episode. So, starting out, Sun and Jin make a baby.
Oh my God, they so do. I love that they come out of the tent smirking like, "That's right, we did it. You heard us." Yeah.
But how did that work out?
Too soon.
I'm just. I don't know.
So you're because I don't remember, Joe, but Jack's still bitter that Jin didn't leave Sun in the sub to be with his.
I'm saying he should have stayed with his. He couldn't save Sun. He should have saved. He should have come.
I,
saved.
I agree with you. He chose Sun and not Ji-Yeon. In the same sense of the season 6 finale in the church, Ji-Yeon wasn't there because in their minds, when they create their ideal situation to reunite with the people that were most important to them in their lives, Ji-Yeon wasn't in that church. So.
Exactly. And who raised her?
That's
Grandma.
That's in Lost, the Next Generation. So,
Hashtag I will write that someday.
Yeah. Hashtag all the best daughters of Jin have cowboy issues. So we have the conception before that, and that comes up later in the show. Sawyer says he loves Kate. Bump bump.
In a drug state.
So does it not count? Was it just like, or does it count because he was finally being honest and not so walled up?
Doesn't count.
I don't think it counts.
But did he say it to Jack?
Yes.
Yeah, he did.
You got to say it to Kate, so it doesn't count.
Right.
Okay.
I agree.
All right.
It doesn't count.
Kate sees a black horse.
I have so many theories about this. Good Lord.
Well, it's one of those things that was a mystery, we can go to later where Sawyer sees the horse, so it wasn't, you know, a figment of her imagination. But what's your theory on why there is a black horse on the island?
Okay, many people have speculated that the man in black manifested as the black horse, mm-hmm. Just like he manifested into very, but we never got confirmation that man in black manifested as an animal.
True.
You know, obviously he became smoke, so why not become an animal if he can become, you know, like there's no, I feel like the black horse is such a metaphor. Like there are two sides. One is light, one is dark. And this is Kate's dark side. This is Kate's Darth Vader. This is basically, we're going to see later in the 23rd Psalm episode where the smoke monster, I'm skipping ahead, confronts Echo with basically flashing images of the crap he's done in his past. That's what the horse is to Kate.
Yep.
That's Kate's black smoke monster. Now, but what threw me was Sawyer seeing it. And also, unlike other manifestations on the island, Kate made physical contact with the horse.
Yep.
So that throws me for a loop.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, okay, this is not a ghost, a spirit, or a manifestation. So this is what happened too when I wrote about the show. I'd be like, oh my God, this is so true. Oh shit, there's a rip in that theory.
But I like it though. I think out of all of it, it has the least holes you can poke through it, in that it would make sense that it is the smoke monster.
Yes.
And it's not that he was off the island. He just saw that there was a horse there, so he knew it would like kind of set her off the rails a little bit to see the horse there, because it was at that significant point in her life. So then we find out what Kate did. Her dad is creepy, so she blows him up.
Daddy issues, party of everyone.
And that actor was at the finale party.
Yeah, he showed up uninvited. It was great.
He was at the finale party, yes. Didn't you make me interview him on stage?
I think he just showed up. He walked like we did. Was like
he walked right by us. Someone goes, "Who's that?" I go, "I don't know."
It's like, "Oh, that's Kate's dad."
And someone, "Oh, that's Kate's dad." I go, "Oh, okay. Was he on the list?"
Oh yeah, the guy who played her real dad that she blew up. Yeah, he came on stage with when I interviewed her.
That's
Rose.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. I had to make some stuff up on the fly, but it was fun.
So mom was being abused, so she killed him and set up an insurance policy to help mom. I was always frustrated with her mom on this one, you know. But again, it's in that state of where she's in an abusive relationship and she's just almost being domineered over, so she just can't get out of it.
Right.
But it's your daughter.
I know, but. It's just one of those.
I see it all the time. I get it, but I was just like going to turn her into the cops. Come on,
yeah. We have a funeral for Shannon, and Anna Lucia ain't going.
Oh boy,
Echo's going though. Echo's not one to mess out on a party.
Well, he is the priest of the island, so it makes sense. The ghost of Kate's father takes over Sawyer's body and says, "You killed me." So what's this coming from? Is this I don't think a smoke monster could have controlled this reaction or this type of action.
I think Sawyer was talking about something else.
I think Sawyer was talking about his own demons, actually.
Yeah.
I know it's Kate's episode, mm-hmm. and I'm with you. I can't believe I'm siding with Jack so much. What is, this is like an alt universe podcast.
There you go, two in a row.
Jin is finally freed of his handcuff.
About time.
Which does, if you haven't, well, okay, I'm not going to say anything else. Michael notices blast doors, and Locke will show Michael the Dharma film and Echo 2.
Oh, my God. Locke and Echo watching the orientation film. Can we just talk about the first mention of the incident?
Yes.
I mean, that's such an integral episode, and I love it. I love the episode orientation, too, because that there's so much. Locke and Echo... You know, the whole thing was built up. This is going to be eventually later. A Ben Linus and Widmore thing. I know that Echo chose to lead the show, the Otto Wally did, but gosh, Locke and Echo were so powerful together.
I know. Watching these in 23rd Psalm and in this episode, it just makes me lament of what could have been.
Yeah.
Because it's just a fantastic character that left too soon because Otto Wally got, you know,
he got the sickness.
Yep, he got the sickness of... Because he didn't like being on the island, if I remember.
Oh, yes. Correctly. I'm making a joke about the freighters and the proximity of the island. It didn't go very well, but yes. one thing I want to point out is, you know, I'm not a very religious person. I am Jewish, so I don't know a lot about the Bible, but Echo made the Josiah speech to Locke.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember writing about this. And he refers to the Book of Law. That's one of the items that Richard Alpert later used to try and recruit young John Locke. So it all ties together.
Very nice. Right. Very nice. Well, and that was a great scene, too, where he sets up the story. It's just like the pacing was perfect. And it's just like, Echo, you were so awesome.
Right.
Gone too soon. Before that, though, we have Kate kissing Jack. A little scene for all the shippers out there, but it was misleading. It was a misdirection.
Hold on a second. I don't remember that. Oh, not me.
Okay. Oh, yeah. No, not you. Not the character, Jack.
I'm sorry. You wish, dude.
and of course, Jack, there's a joke about, I think it was in Family Guy, that he's always like breathing heavily in every scene. and watching this, I just see it's like, Kate.
Well, to be fair, this scene, I think he has an excuse.
Well, I mean, just watch it again. You'll see like he's always like out of breath. So then Sawyer comes to, he thinks.
Playing, take my breath away.
Oh, boy. Stop.
Sawyer comes to. He thinks that they've been saved, but he's still on the island, and he sees Kate's horse. So that's just like a little wrinkle there. But again,
totally.
if the Man in Black actually manifested the horse, that makes sense that Sawyer would see him too,
right?
It would be physically there,
right? Although it's also an island full of weird things and animals, so it could have been just a black horse. So.
True.
Horse is a horse is a horse.
and Michael gets communication from Walt, maybe.
IMs him.
Yes, a little AIM chat. Even though Pierre Chang says, don't do it, Mr. Chang, because they find the other scene. Now, here's my question. Do you think it was really Walt or the other setting up Michael?
Yeah, they're setting up Michael.
Agreed.
Yeah.
What is wrong with me?
You finally come to your senses.
This is the dark side, isn't it?
This is your black horse. This is your black horse.
I am system failure.
anything else we want to talk about what Kate did?
I just want to point out something I wrote in 2005 that I'm very proud of.
Okay.
I quoted it today and I wrote it down. And so just keep in mind, this is long before we met Juliet, okay?
Perfect.
I said, Kate and Sawyer are cut from the same criminal conning cloth. They have the most obvious chemistry, but I believe that opposites attract. Both of them will probably wind up with their polar opposites like Dr. Jack and criminal Kate and criminal Sawyer and some other doctor we haven't met yet.
Wow. Ooh, nice.
Just saying, I called it in 2005, Damon, okay?
I mean, because that would basically be, if you were Jack, you would then tout that for years.
It's true. Years. It's true. Although Rose and Bernard did not work for the Dharma Initiative, dude, okay?
Well, they did. They were retired from the Dharma Initiative.
All right, fair enough.
Oh, man. All right, moving on to the 23rd Psalm, Echo's first flashback episode.
Can I just say before we start?
Yeah.
Where they have young Echo and yeah, his, you know, everything going on.
Uh-huh.
This could have been a show in itself.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
The whole storyline, that because it's kind of a dark storyline, how Echo becomes, you know, who he is and stuff like that. When I was watching today, I go, this could have been its own story. It could have been its own TV show, and I would have watched it.
Well, again, I think it's just kudos to Adewale Akinawe Agbaje for he just played the character so well, like, and so engaging, like, and you know,
he has screen presence, like you said. He just when he's on the screen, you stop and you watch.
Yep, and you listen, and you listen. That's like, it's just like, it's awesome. But we do have the origins of Mr. Echo. And I love how, you know, this was still shot in Hawaii, you know,
that, yes.
it's just kudos to,
we saw the location where they shot it at.
Yeah.
And you'd never know.
No. But they just did such a fantastic job.
They were playing soccer and stuff.
Yep. Yep. So Echo killed a man to save his brother, which is such an emotional story. And again, yeah. I think to what Jack said about this could be its own TV show. Like it's a shame this was only like one episode in 10 minutes of flashbacks.
They did it so effectively with the use of time they had. It's kind of incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. So Echo then coming back from his flashback blows up Charlie's spot, poor Charlie. Michael is already scoping out the gun situation. Jin doesn't like the Kinks. Who would have known?
Yeah.
don't tell Mr. Echo he has no soul. That's a bit of advice to people. That scene, again, just talk about presence. Like, that was just a B.A. don't mess with me scene. It was fantastic.
Yep.
I remember saying that at the time. Do you remember, Jack?
I do. I do remember that.
Oh, yeah.
That's a surprise.
Little bit of trivia. This was our most ridiculously horrible episode we ever did as a podcast, was the one for the Panther.
Why?
We had so much hate. Well, because I was mad at Jay. Something about the recording.
Well, the main problem was is that we started out, and then what Kate did was the last one before, like, the long winter break. And then over the winter break, we did, like, six shows. Because it was like a 7-week hiatus, and we just built up a lot of our following, and we started getting a lot of calls, and we spent a lot of time on listener feedback in the break. And this is our first episode coming back and having to do a recap, as well as adding this surplus of calls that we never had.
We couldn't record it right away either.
Well, because it made a way too long recap, and so it's almost like we liked what we came up with during the break, like in terms of our style. And then we tried to fit back into recapping an episode. It just went too long.
Yeah. But then you became professionals later.
Well, what kind of birthed out of that was splitting the show into two episodes.
Right.
And then came up with the AAC feed. And, like, so much stuff came out of, like, the frustrations with trying to podcast about this episode.
But I think we were mad at each other. I know I was really mad at you. But
yeah,
because
I think I was taking a long time to set up the show. But out of that came... probably the podcast, you know.
I think that was today. The only time we were ever mad at each other while recording.
I was fine. You were just a joke.
Okay, I was upset with you while recording. It was me.
So, Charlie, I'm sorry, Claire ain't buying Charlie's BS.
Right.
Charlie's just a bad liar. It's just like, come on, man. Just tell the truth.
Well, that's what he should have done. He said, yeah, just keep it around it so I won't do it. It's just testing me.
We also find out that Michael was a ranch dressing murderer before a people murderer.
Yeah. Well, I do like that Locke is the one that showed Michael how to use a gun. Good job, Locke. Good job.
I wrote here, oops, that does not work well.
Yeah. Way to go, Locke. You did it. Oops, Locke did it again.
Locke, to be fair, Locke set up a lot of F moments, you know?
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. In the flashbacks, Yemi
wait a minute. How many people died because of Locke?
That's a really loaded question. I mean, do you have a year? Because really, if you go back and analyze.
Yeah.
It's like I'm recording with two Jacks today. What is going on?
You know what? I get.
Joe, I bring you on here to defend me against this man.
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. I'm having a moment.
So Yemi is pretty unappreciative of what Echo did for him.
I thought so.
He's kind of high and mighty about it. I'm like, come on, man. He killed a person to save your life, to save your soul.
Right.
And you're sitting here criticizing him that he has no soul. You know, it's just like, come on. It's messed up. Kate gives Sawyer a new haircut. Looking spiffy.
Hilarious.
I will say the flirting between Sawyer and Kate is adorable. I thought it was
no doubt. They had great chemistry.
Fantastic chemistry.
I always thought that there was a deep connection with her and Jack, but I did enjoy the chemistry, the outright sexual chemistry between Kate and Sawyer.
Well, she needed Jack to ground her, though.
Yes, absolutely.
Sawyer, she just would have been wild.
See, I heard grounder, and then I thought of the 100. Never mind.
Okay.
We are introduced properly to old Smokey
for
the first time. And I remember this was such a big deal. And there was all the screen caps of what was inside the smoke. And it was all like flashes of Echo's life. So it was like this big, at least a big chunk of reveal of what the smoke monster was, the man in black was.
A lot of calls and emails on that one.
Yeah. But it's a basis for a lot of theories. Just like we were talking about the horse, we would know that the horse, he could manifest as a horse because then he could scan her past and use it to his advantage. So, we'll leave it for we want some freaking answers if we want to dig into that. But any thoughts about the old Smokey? Any remembrances of that scene?
Well, really, to me, it became much more important once in season 4, Smokey flashed Juliet and flashed white instead of black and did not flash what she's done in her past, which to me was a total tell for that Smokey had future plans for her. And I'll lead into that later about leading to the incident. But I just think it's fascinating that the smoke monster seems to judge, if that's possible, when it was scanning.
Yeah.
And it was very particular. He was very particular with that and the people and the images. And so I appreciated this scene more when I compared it with season 4's scanning, really. Yeah.
Nice. Very good
point. But yeah, overall, if I may, I'll just say that my favorite part of the 23rd Psalm is the spiritual connection between Echo and Charlie. Not only spiritual, but familial.
Mm-hmm.
They have a very interesting relationship parallel with their brothers.
Yes.
Charlie covered for and made excuses for his older brother, Liam. Echo, on the other hand, put his younger sibling in danger and was responsible for his death, in a sense. I feel like the downfall of both Echo and Charlie, and arguably the reason that both of them were recruited to come to the island, was heroin. One dealt it for money, and the other was an addict.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a really great parallel for me, those two. And it was sort of like, yes, Locke and Echo had the dynamic, but I really think that Echo and Charlie had that really nice thread running for them.
Yeah, I agree completely. That's a great call out in terms of the dynamic between their background and what kind of brought them together. It's like you can kind of put a mirror between two people and just kind of see how the lives, diverge from that mirror and the things that are similar and the things that are different. But it's a great, great, great call out.
Yeah, thank you.
Spoiler, maybe that's why they killed Charlie, because they had to kill Echo. So it's like, we can't go on. They were like each other's, they were each other's constant. Who knows?
Spoiler, he's kidding. Don't mess people's heads.
Yeah. Michael is still talking to Walter, the others, or whoever. But Jack says, don't think we've forgotten him. But I'm kind of with Michael on this one. Now that I have a kid, I'd be like, they're all, going about their days like everything's fine. It's like, my son's like still kidnapped by these people.
Right. A lot of people didn't like Michael, made fun of him for the whole world, and my son, and I'm not a parent, but I do get it. Like, he was just getting into, like, Walt's life. Then they crash land. The shit hits the fan, pardon my French. And then he gets kidnapped, and, like, that's, of course, going to be his only thought. He's a father. He's taking responsibility. He's trying to mend fences. And everyone else is every man for themselves.
Yeah, I don't like what Michael's ultimate, what he actually did in the end, but I get that he's, like he's saying, I need to find my son.
Right.
But no one wants to help me.
Yep. We said Yemi was unappreciative, but Yemi did sacrifice himself to save Echo in the end. He stood up and tried to, make a play to save Echo, and ended up, costing him his life. In the end, his sacrifice saved Echo.
Right.
True.
We have the first of many. I can't have you around my baby, Charlie.
I love when you do that. Amazing.
The beginning of their falling out. A lot of people were frustrated by that. Just that whole sequence of events for Charlie. And we'll dig into it more with Fire Plus Water, but that's the really the start of it there. And then we go to Charlie. Everybody's happy, but he's sitting there staring at his stash of Virgin Mary statues. So what else? Any other thoughts about this episode? I didn't really talk too much about that great scene where they actually recite the 23rd Psalm as they're watching the plane burn. But again, I always love this episode. And it's just again, we can just lament about Mr. Echo and where that story could have gone.
Right. I think because we were treated to so few Echo flashbacks, I feel like his episodes were very strong.
Yeah. Yep. And to Jack's point, like, you're right. Like, that whole story could have been made into, like, a season of stories.
It's just because it's such a fascinating... It just fascinated me that he, you know, he's a good little kid. You know, he's helped protecting his brother. He has to do something he probably didn't want to do, but he did it, and then he becomes this drug lord and a bad guy.
Right.
I think it's you could have gone a whole year of how he developed and how he was trained and how he was molded into this bad guy. But
yeah.
And then he becomes a good guy in the end. Mm-hmm. Who he really was the whole time.
Yeah. Moving on to the hunting party.
What Kate did. Oh, I'm sorry.
To me wasn't as heavy as the first two, but there's still some good stuff here. We find out that Jack likes Italian women, which
but she looks like she looks like an Italian Kate.
Of course she does.
I'd really never noticed it before today.
Really? You think so?
Because if you look at her, she has kind of Kate's hair, she has kind of Kate's look. She's an Italian Kate. Yeah, yeah, she's an Italian Kate.
That's why I didn't work out with Sarah. She was too blonde and funny.
Exactly.
It is weird seeing, I can't remember her name, but
Julie Bowen.
Thank you, Julie Bowen, who's fantastic on
Modern Family.
It is kind of weird to see her, because we know her now so well as Claire Dunphy. And now seeing her back as Sarah, it's always trippy to look back. But yes, Michael is going after Walt, and he doesn't care how he has to do it. So Locke, go ahead, comment about Locke and his blunders.
I've already done that. But you notice when Jack wakes up from that bunk bed, mm-hmm. I'm sure this has been talked about before, but I never noticed on the bunk bed there's a D in the upper, a wooden D, the wood, there's a D face. So I'm assuming that's Dharma in the bunk bed.
Was it like etched in the bunk bed or just like
it's if you look at it, it's got like different slats in it. And if you look at it, it looks like a D. And I go, I never noticed that D before. I'm sure we talked about it. I'm sure there's no way no one ever did in this whole, because lots of fans are crazy that no one ever noticed it before. But I go, I didn't remember it or I just noticed it. I'm like going, when he wakes up, when he hears that Locke is being hit in the head because he's Locke.
Right.
And when Jack wakes up for the bunk bed, he's on the bottom bunk. The top bunk to the left, where the pillow would be, there's a D.
Okay, I've watched this show probably arguably as much as you have over the years and examined it every scene to death, and I never noticed it. So good job, man.
I'm just going to put it out there that Jack's an old man. He's probably half senile. So just, take it with a grain of salt.
Maybe it was a J. I don't know. It looks like
D for douchebags, because basically they took everyone who was a douche and locked them in there like Ben.
There you go. That could be it.
Kate gives out bananas.
Great episode.
It's fantastic. A lot of stuff going on here.
Never see a banana.
they get out when Sawyer needs a Band-Aid, and they're going to go after Walt, and of course Sawyer's going to go along. And Kate wants to go too, but Jack's kind of a jerk about it, and tells her no. Nobody puts Kate in a corner, all right?
But wouldn't you say that Christian was, going back to the whole Christian Shepherd when they're talking, but the tumor on the guy's spine, Christian didn't really have good bedside manner there, did he?
Nope.
But again, it's like father, like son, right?
But no, he always criticized Jack for not having bedside manner. And this one, he's not. Now, was Jack like going, okay, I got this attractive Italian girl who looks like Kate.
Who Kate is yet.
Yeah, is that why I want to do the surgery, or do I really think I could save him?
Jack has a hero complex, like a classic stereotypical hero complex. So I think that's it in general, that he wants to be the person that saves somebody, or,
Yeah, it's true.
Jack is a Coldplay song. I will try to fix you. That is the song.
I will try to fix you.
I'm glad that you could reach that note because I cannot.
It's the only notes I can reach, or the high notes.
We've heard your songs.
So poor Kate gets, that bugged me going back. I was like, Jack, why are you being such a jerk? But I think he's more just jealous that, you know, Sawyer and Kate seem
to have. He's mad about that.
Jate is fate, as they
say. He even tries to tell Sawyer, you know, you're on antibiotics, you can't go.
Right.
So Sawyer may have all the nicknames, but Locke knows his real name.
Yes.
I thought that was a nice play, because he's giving him the old, you know, Mr. Clean joke, and then, you know, Locke has a good retort there. I know you guys don't like Locke, but I thought that was a good retort by Locke.
Hey, I'm okay with a bald guy having a comeback.
I just want to go on record by saying I have never once said I don't like John Locke.
I know.
Mount Baldy might, but I don't.
I don't know what Lindelof said, but I never said it. I never said I like didn't like. I just said it's John Locke is he's just not the guy that everyone thinks he is.
Well, that's very much an understatement. Yes.
There you go. See?
Yeah.
We agree.
Ah, crap.
We just made Jay cry too, which is even better.
We're making a ripple in like the time space continuum here. Go on.
I've done everything you asked me to do, but why? Oh man. So Gabriella's dad is dead, but Jack kissed an Italian girl and he liked it, but he walked away.
It's the best recap ever.
We can't do this. Why not? I'm trying to think of a reason. It's too bad Jack didn't talk to Sarah before.
Yeah, he's like, you could have told me this before.
You're seeing someone else? Okay. All
right. Right. Oh, man.
But again, Jack being noble here, I got to give him some kudos. You know,
I get some willpower. That was pretty good.
So then we have probably my favorite scene of, or, you know, part of the episode. We have Zeke, the friendly sea billies, yes. Fireside
Mr. Friendly.
Chat. Yeah, Mr. Friendly. But at the time, so like we didn't know he was Mr. Friendly, I think there was Friendly was mentioned somewhere, so we called him Zeke the Friendly Sea Billy, because Sea Billy was another name when he was on the boat. Right. But we have his fireside chat.
I thought this was an excellent scene, by the way. I think we all agree.
Yes,
Walt's a very special boy.
He's a special boy.
Light him up.
Light him up. Another great is just like when he's saying, I think there's only one of you, and you have a guy out, you know, as a sniper. Right. And he's like, that's an interesting theory. I thought that was a nice little play to the fans at home.
But also, we meet Alex for the first time. We don't know it's Ben's daughter, but we meet Alex.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Rest in peace. Pour one out for our homies.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert for the 10-year-old show or 11-year-old show. We also have a fantastic little side scene that I loved. We had Charlie, Hurley, Saeed, and the Lonely Hearts Club. Hurley thinks he has a shot at Libby. Again, rest in peace, pouring out for our homies.
Thanks, Locke.
Was that Locke's fault?
Yeah. He taught Michael how to use a gun.
I thought everybody instinctually knows how to use a gun, so
not
I
Michael.
Feel like there's a hole in this theory.
Michael and Hurley don't. Everybody else does.
I'm going to make a crude phrase. You ready?
Yes.
Regarding this, Locke, the ultimate cock block. Boom! I'm dropping the mic.
If it rhymes, you're fine.
Okay, good.
I just rhymed.
Not words I normally say, by the way, so it did sound
kind of funny. Going back to the fireside chat, a line is drawn, but Jack won't leave, but a captured Kate forces them to.
His look was classic, though.
Yeah.
Like, just, really?
Come on, Kate. But you know what? In the end, she probably saved them all by getting caught.
Yeah.
Because they were
Jack
surrounded.
Jack was on, like, a suicide mission. I don't know where his head was at.
He wasn't going to be told what to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kate gets a cold shoulder from Jack. And in the flashback, Sarah leaves Jack for someone else. Again, I agree with Jack here. Couldn't you have told me that earlier?
God, I was hoping it would be someone we know. I thought for sure in season 6 there'd be like some reveal that Sarah was with someone else we've met.
Sawyer.
Wow, that would be too good.
That would have been funny. I think it was Christian. I still believe it was Christian Shepherd.
You know, they did kind of make you hint at that a little bit with Jack's jealousy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that and just also like, because Christian kept saying, "You don't do that. You have a wife." And like, he was like being very pious,
very protective of her.
Yeah. And then we have the birth of Jack and Anna Lucia's army.
That was awesome.
Yes. the army that never happened.
But in theory, it would have been awesome.
Yes. I remember at the time, I was like, oh!
I remember talking about this because we all said, okay, why wouldn't you go to Saeed to build an army? I realized he was on the losing side, but still, you go to Saeed to build an army. Not Anna Lucia.
I mean, if we remember, the season 4 finale, I think? Or no, season 3 finale, where he killed a guy with his feet.
Oh my god, the breakdancing neck move was amazing.
Yeah, it
never made sense that Jack went to Anna Lucia, but I think maybe I think it was his way of telling Kate, I'm upset with you.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm with Anna now.
Yeah.
So then, anything else you want to talk about this episode before we get to a fan favorite, Fire Plus Water?
Everybody.
I think we're good. Let's move on, man.
All right. So, Fire Plus Water, we have Charlie's Demented Christmas Dream.
And I analyzed the crap out of that particular one.
Good stuff. As a toy collector, vintage toy collector, that is a era accurate of Ultron that he does have there. So.
Oh, I'm so glad that you pointed that out.
You know, that's what I'm here for.
I wet my pants with excitement on that one.
Yeah, I bet.
We have Locke moving in on his girl, and Charlie ain't too happy.
Yeah, it didn't take Locke long, did it, to get in there?
No. So do you think he was really moving in on... That's a little creepy. He's a little old. Or was it more he's just looking after...
I think
Aaron.
He was completely innocent.
Yeah, I do as well.
It's called, this dude's a heroin addict and you have a baby.
Yeah. Let's. So.
I think Locke had other... I'm not saying he was moving in on... But I don't know. I don't trust Locke.
I found Locke to be completely asexual on the island. It was kind of blissful. I mean, really, I don't think there was any malintent here.
No, I don't think that. I just think there was something he was... Maybe there was going to be another storyline with Aaron or something like that.
Okay.
And they went a different direction.
See, we disagreed. I feel much better now.
There you go.
Thank God.
All is right.
Claire wants space. In the flashbacks, we find Charlie is an uncle. We have another dream going on. And I guess Charlie can swim when he wants to.
Charlie, he never said he can't swim. He said he doesn't swim.
Well, and again, you could also say it was a dream.
He's drunk.
But we see another flashback. He does swim as a child.
I know.
I'm sorry. Just getting ahead of myself here.
They had, I don't know if they course corrected, that they had to have him be a swimmer because of the looking glass later.
Yeah, that's true. So, yep, it's just a little thing. Sawyer helps Hurley connect with Libby. I thought that was a really cute scene. I was like, hey, Libby. I thought that was nice.
Yeah.
And then we have a nice little call out to what's going to happen in the episode Dave. Where Hurley knows Libby from somewhere.
Right.
Yep.
That was a nice little caught there. But since she plays a distraction game with, I'm going to try this on, turn around.
Let me take off my shirt. Then you won't remember shit.
Echo.
I can't say I've used that technique, but it's kind of genius.
Yeah, it's the one you know. It's like, oh, what? Oh, I'm moving
it
on.
It works with women as well as men, FYI.
Good to know. Echo plays into Charlie's dream. Echo's chopping down trees for his church. So Charlie thinks he has to baptize Aaron. Anna wants to know if Jack is hitting that in reference to Kate.
Well, how long did it take Anna Lucia to build that shelter?
She has been building it for like
five episodes or whatever it is. Yeah. It's like,
she was a cop, not a carpenter.
Well, if you're going to start an army, you need to learn how to build a shelter quicker than that.
Locke is harsh in Charlie's mellow and he takes a stash. Liam leaves Charlie with nothing. That's just heartbreaking to me. It's like, dude, like he did everything for you and you're just like leaving him.
Yep.
But again, love the call out about the last episode, or the previous episode with Echo. Love the parallels there. Charlie goes too far. And then he has to experience John's right hook.
Yes.
Always bugged me that nobody stepped in and helped Charlie out there. Nobody.
Well, I mean, everyone at that point saw him as for what he was presenting himself as, which is a druggie.
Yeah, I get it. I get
and
it.
And a danger.
I get it, but nobody, I mean, even Hurley, who's his friend, was there, right. Didn't say, hey, you all right? Let me help you up. Right. What's going on with you?
But it's just when you involve a little baby into it, I think that's what kind of got it. It was like...
Right. It's awkward.
I get that, but still, Charlie's been... cool person to be on the island with for 40 days. All of a sudden now.
Yeah.
It's cute that that's the one thing in this episode that bugs you.
it bugged me then, and it bugs me now.
Clearly. I do have a little fun tidbit to share, if it's okay.
Yes.
From Fire and Water. So knowing we were going to talk about this episode, I reached out to Adam Horowitz, who was one of the executive producers and writers on Lost. He and his writing producing partner, he and Eddie Kitsis, now run Once Upon a Time, and we're very friendly. And I said, do you have anything you can share with us about the writing of Fire and Water? And he laughed, and he said, and I have it written down here, a bit of a haze. It was 10 years ago after all, but there is a DVD feature, I believe, on season 2 where you can actually see us writing this episode in our office. We were writing the exact scene where Locke confronts Charlie by the hidden drugs. And he said, but share this. As a Jew, I had to ask my Catholic wife many things to write the Echo baptism scene. So there you have it. And I would have had to do the same thing if I was a writer of a show. But I thought that was really funny. And something you don't really think about is, you know, as just someone who analyzed the show, whenever there was any kind of religious reference, I would Google it and try and figure out to glean some meaning from it. So I can't even imagine writing a baptism scene as a Jew. So that was cute.
Yes, and again, it was, as a Catholic myself, they did it very, did a very good job in writing, because it seemed very accurate. So
I will tell,
research was well done.
You know, on the religious note, you know, when Charlie had his religious dream, you have Aaron in the ocean, you have Claire and his mother dressed like angels. Because I studied the background of every scene, in the Charlie flashback, in their home, the family home,
yes,
there's a painting of the baptism of Christ, and that's exactly how these characters were dressed in his dream.
Yep.
Which I think is fascinating.
I remember we would take screen caps of it and show the differences. And then eventually, Hurley in the robes, they turned him into a Jedi Knight, which was a lot of fun.
Amazing.
But again, they, even for an episode like this, and it's kind of, this episode I think is famous in the podcast community anyway, this is the episode that kind of broke Ryan and Jen's back as far as podcasting.
The ho-hum episode.
They hung up their cleats after this episode as podcasters.
Really? I don't remember that.
They did not, they were just like, I think, one, they're busy, their lives are busy, but they felt they didn't like where the show was going, and this episode was like almost the feather that broke the camel's back.
I can remember listening to their podcast of this episode where they're ho-hum, you know, I was like, wow.
All right. So those are the episodes. Again, I think looking back, I thought they were also really solid. I think this Charlie storyline was, like the island stuff, I didn't like. You know, I didn't like him. And I get there has to be some drama there, and he has to almost have like a relapse. I get that. But it was tough to see, because I think everybody loves Charlie. So it was just tough to see him take the dark side. And at the end of this episode, we all made fun of, you know, say Charlie became a Sith Lord when he kind of put the hoodie over his head.
Right.
But the background, just like the tragedy of what his brother, you know, just took. And even when he went to him again in his moment of need, it was always just whatever Liam needed, not what Charlie needed. So
Liam's a selfish guy.
In retrospect, I have two very, very important, like not important, very fun theories that I've been working on for years at that point that I connected to season 5 and 6. If you will indulge me for a minute, I will share this with you.
Okay.
In Fire and Water, in flashback there, I find this is a great parallel. There's a young Charlie playing piano, being encouraged by his mother. He's told he's special. In season 5, you have the exact same scene of the young Faraday being told by Mrs. Hawking that he is special and he's playing the piano. And to me, the red flag in my head went bing, bing, bing. And then the time travel started, and Faraday time traveled. And I went, it is not a coincidence that Daniel Faraday is the one who programmed, this is my theory, Daniel Faraday programmed the Looking Glass Station with the Beatles song, knowing in advance that Charlie would one day be the one to decipher it.
Ooh, love it.
And I stand by that theory. And when I present it to people who wrote the show, they walk away from me. So I'm just going to go with I'm probably right, or at least on the same page that they might have intended it. And obviously, Lost is a choose-your-own-adventure, and they don't give you blatant answers, and I appreciate and respect that. But I very strongly believe that it's not a coincidence that those two had those two scenes with their mothers, the pianos, and the looking glass.
Well,
you find a lot of people walk away from you? So
easy.
Come on.
Actually, no. Hey, I had to get you like a magnet.
There's also a thing that you mentioned that I think is worth calling out in the parallels there. People love the Harry Potter books because the books parallel themselves, like from a book 1 to book 7, book 2 to book 6, book three to book five, and then four is kind of the middle pillar. So if you kind of do the same kind of split out of one through six, you have two on one side and five on the other, and then you have those two flashbacks in relative proximity to each other when you kind of, you know, cut it in half and mirror each other. So again, that's a kind of a cool parallel and kind of mirroring effect of the storylines that you kind of show there.
And even if they didn't intend it, well done, bravo, because it freaking works.
Yep.
And one other small thing is, in season six, Ben Linus is in Los Angeles and he stores bodies at a butcher shop. Okay, he goes to a butcher shop. The butcher's name is Jill. And I was like, that's interesting. Until I saw the name of the butcher shop, which is Simon's Butcher Shop. Now, not a coincidence. Charlie's father was Simon Pace. Charlie's father was a butcher named Simon Pace. It is not a coincidence that that's the name of the shop in Los Angeles. Mm. Just want to point that out.
Hmm. Very good. Good call.
And I can't possibly draw a line between those two, but I know it exists for a reason.
Either just a fun call out, or he moved from the UK and started his little shop in the States.
And became, you know, a morgue. Whatever.
All right, so let's go to top five pivotal moments from these episodes. So these are from these episodes what were pivotal in the overall scheme of Lost. So number one, we find out what Kate did, and does it really matter? I think it does. Well, I think it does.
It matters overall, big picture for her character. Yes.
Yeah,
I never really thought it was a bad thing, but that's just me.
Now, here's the thing. In the last Comic-Con in 2009, they played this video with the guy, you know, John Walsh, for the, you know, he does the kidnap kid videos, and he did all the, they did a Kate Austin expose with this guy, okay? A joke video that they made that throws shadow of doubt onto whether or not Kate killed Wayne. And so I think David and Carlton are totally messing with us to make it seem like maybe it wasn't Eric who blew up her dad.
Yep.
That's all.
Hmm. I agree.
All right, and then
even if she did, the guy's a bad guy.
Totally, he's got a D on his bunk.
Yes, exactly.
number
that sounds two, really bad.
Yes,
anyway.
It does. Number two, there's a whole lot of shipping going on. For the shippers out there, I'm not one myself. I don't think any of us are here. But there's a lot of stuff for the shippers to chew on. And write.
There was a big shipper community out there.
And there's nothing wrong with that. We just aren't those.
Yeah, a lot of fan fiction coming from some of this stuff from these episodes. number three, we get to see Smokey, a.k.a. the Man in Black, up close and personal for the first time. Yeah, I mean, just a lot of basis for theories on the Man in Black and Smokey come from that moment.
But you watch this when Echo, and Echo's looking at it, and he's staring him down like he's you know, the drug lord again. He's intimidated by the smoke monster, but he's also not backing down. Where Locke said it, and he said it was beautiful. It was this. What did Locke see that Echo didn't see?
Don't know.
You know, he said he looked into the eye of the island and what he saw was beautiful. And, you know, we didn't see Smokey flash Locke, but maybe I speculate 10 years later that actually 11, when Locke saw Smokey for the first time, Locke got flashed white like Juliet, because Smokey basically at that very moment picked Locke for the future ascension into his body. And I believe that he knew he was going to be a patsy and a pawn, and that he had no actual spine.
Whoa. I agree 100% with what you're saying, but Jay's over there, you know, curling up in a corner.
No, it's fine.
In a fetal position. I'm just saying, like, to me, as soon as the pivotal part for me, the most important, my number one on your list would have been Smokey's scanning of Echo, because then everything started making sense to me in terms of who he scanned and why.
Yep. And again, these top five, they're not in any particular order. There's top
okay,
five.
Good.
You don't have to defend yourself.
No, I'm just saying, it's usually just in order of episodes.
Oh, no.
Number four, the Others confrontation. In the grand scheme of things, there's going to be a lot of confrontations, but I thought this was a good pace setter for what would come for a lot of the conflicts between our Losties and the Others.
Agreed.
And then number five, this one's a little bit more out well, not really out there, but all of the loose ends because of early deaths. So with Anna Lucia and the army didn't really come to fruition because she died. Libby and Hurley's relationship and the whole mystery about her, and why was she in the hospital, but died. So that didn't really go anywhere. That was started in these episodes. And Echo, his church said he was going to make all this stuff, just the loose ends because of early deaths. And I would also argue that Echo, his background and everything, I think that the Locke, or Man in Black taking over Locke, he was going to take over Echo. That's just my feeling about it. Or their intentions.
That's totally fair. We'll agree to disagree.
Yeah, I don't think he would. I don't think he could have taken over Echo.
Echo wasn't necessarily, he wasn't, quote, amenable to coercion like John Locke was.
It's true. I just... It would just been a cooler situation. And more
John Locke wanted to believe that he was needed. And,
I'm trying to find a way to save John Locke. He didn't have to die.
There's,
okay,
there's no way. He had to die because he was what Joe said earlier.
All right.
Thank you.
It's time for I Want Some Freaking Answers. All right. So let's just pose some things here. If you guys have any, please go ahead and interject them. But Kate's horse, did we get an answer for what Kate's horse was?
Nope.
But there's some good theories that I think
good,
at
I
least
think
give
good
a
theories,
good answer.
Yeah.
Like your theory, I think is a palatable answer that I think.
Thank you, sir.
So how did Walt communicate through the computer, or was it Walt? Did we get an answer?
At least my best friend Jack and I think that it was the others.
It was the others, yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, when we saw the Pearl Station, there was another computer. So I think it's you can connect the dots and say that I would assume it was the others.
We know there were cameras in there.
Yeah.
So they knew when Michael was sitting there. So
true.
So that's and you're right. The cameras, so they can surveillance it. I mean, that I think is explainable. Next one. Did Yemi know that the plane was going to crash on the island? Was he talking about saving a soul, or did he have some type of premonition that if he got on that plane, he would have died on the island?
I don't think he knew. I think Jacob brought him there.
Yeah, I don't think he knew.
No?
No.
All right. Next question. Do we find out who the others are?
Yes, Mr. Friendly.
Yes.
But we don't. But they're really not who they pretend to be.
Right. They have their theatrical makeup on.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the only big question. Is there anything else that may be missing? Questions? They're like, what is that?
No, I mean, I can do a whole hour of Libby theories because I'm obsessed with her. And I just think that it's totally, again, not a coincidence that she was at the home with Hurley. I don't think she was actually crazy. It's not a coincidence that she shows up. She's Desmond at the airport and gives him a freaking sailboat named Elizabeth, which is, you know, Elizabeth is her name and her dead husband's name is Dave. And then Hurley sees Dave on the island. It could be the same Dave and the same Dave that was in the home with Hurley. Like, this is all freaking connected.
Oh, yeah. And it's like kind of going to the pivotal moments. Like there's so much there that could have been, and I don't know. It, you know, conspiracy theory, the whole, you know, her and Michelle Rodriguez, and the whole DUI thing.
It is my understanding. I know I've been accused of being an apologist for Lost. Okay, and I am somewhat of an insider, but this is not an official statement when I say that it is my understanding that those scenes and that episode was written before the DUIs.
Exactly.
But that they did as a nod to it did name the episode 2 for the road. That is my understanding, but you can't don't quote me on it. So
okay, don't worry. This is just a podcast. It just goes out there.
It's fine.
But yeah, that is it for talking about these episodes. Again, people criticize this little stretch here, but there's a lot of good stuff. A lot of good stuff in these episodes.
Clearly, look at the genius we came up with.
I know. I know. So hopefully,
they're not as bad as people. You know, it's got some bad scenes in it, but I think overall they're very good episodes.
Or something bad scenes for me. Like,
please
like,
have me back on for like Stranger to Strangeland and Exposé. Please, yes. I would like to defend those.
Actually, those are within 4 episodes of each other, right? I think so.
God,
they're in that stretch of season 3.
Okay. Well, if the pace we're going, do you have time in 2019?
Absolutely.
All right.
Well, I think I've gotten it. So the whole thing is like a 10-year retrospective. So we'll start season 3 next year. So it'll be 10 years from season 3, and then we'll be good to go.
Sounds great.
All right.
But Joe, thank you again. It's always great time talking to you, and it's always great talking Lost with you. And it's so much fun because just like getting back into, you know, taking a bite out of one of the most densely mysterious and character driven dramas in TV history, and it's always a blast to talk about it with you.
It's a pleasure for me as well, because it is just like memory lane with you guys.
I know.
Joking around and yet rediscovering theories that were like, oh my God, what if it was that? It doesn't even matter how much time has passed.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But again, for those at home, do you want to kind of say what's going on with the Cancer Gets Lost? Where can they, because the bidding is going on right now,
yes,
right?
Yes, so, the bidding, some items starting in tomorrow through the weekend. 100% of the final bid proceeds being donated to Alex's Lemonade Stand, which is an amazing childhood cancer organization. All details are on cancergetslost.org and at cancergetslost on Twitter. And you can find me at JoePinionated. And I'm always there to talk about charity stuff, but also pop culture and television. So come find me.
And then also, do you have a website or anything yet for your 100 podcast?
For the Dropship, the 100, yeah. The 100 podcast, it's going to be on scifimafia.com.
Scifimafia.com. And again, yes. it's if they're searching for it in iTunes, which is not up yet, but it may be by the time you listen to this episode.
Yeah, it's called The Dropship.
The Dropshoot?
The Dropship.
Ship.
The Dropship, ship. Sorry.
The Dropship, as in our favorite show.
There's no shoot. Yeah.
So I sound like an old man. Is it The Dropshoot?
It's The Dropship, the 100 podcast.
I'm the old one here. I know exactly what she was talking about.
Well, he's got a kid now, so he's, you know, half deaf.
Exactly.
As soon as I check out, as soon as I catch up, I think I have, there's 16 episodes in season 2?
Yes.
All right, so I should be done by I'm a bit busy this weekend. I'll probably be done by next week. I will check. No, I'll be done before that. I will check out the podcast as soon as I get.
I
don't want to be spoiled.
Yes, we definitely, the first episode is 2 hours. We look back at seasons 1 and 2, and our next episode is going to be season 3, Predictions and Theories, which, as you know, is my bread and butter.
All right.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome.
It's an excellent show.
All right, Joe, thank you so much for coming on. And again, we will definitely do this again. I think doing Stranger in a Strange Land next Jose would be a lot of fun.
Excellent.
But anywho, take care. And again, we wish you much success for all of your endeavors. You do such great work. And we will talk to you later.
Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Thank you again for Joe Garfine, Joe Pinionated, Al on Twitter. Always great talking Lost with her.
Time just flew by, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
I mean, I looked up and I said, wow, just quick.
Yes. That's when you know the podcast is flowing. It goes by really quick. But that is it for this week's The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack. As always, you can give us a call at 385-309-0311.
Calling time.
Anything, if you want to talk about theories from this episode, and we'll put them on the next Lost Podcast that we do. You can send emails to lostpodcast@gmail.com. And also join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/Jay and Jack group. Again, this show is made possible by you, our listeners, through patreon.com. We have over 103 patrons that contribute to this show, and you can become one today by going over to patreon.com/Jay and Jack. At the end of each episode, we give a special thanks to those that contribute at a significant amount, and those people are Tack from Tokyo and Eckhart Richter. Big thanks to you guys, and a big thanks to all 103 of our patrons that make this show possible. And if you want to listen to any of the shows that are out there, because all of our shows are free, all of our shows are available on iTunes, you can go check that out right now. Like I said, for the Lost fans out there, if you aren't watching The Leftovers, you need to. I mean, this isn't, you know, a communist country, so I'm not forcing you, but you really need to, because it's fantastic. And we podcasted last season, we're podcasting about this season, and it is an absolute
delight. So everyone in Korea has to be watching The Leftovers.
One of my favorite shows we've done recently is we restarted Game of Thrones, and we brought our good friend Nick Dunn onto that show, and he's a Game of Thrones historian and very knowledgeable person. That'll be coming back when Game of Thrones comes back in the springtime. You can also check out other shows that we're doing right now about Survivor, which is a lot of fun. We do that one with my wife Colleen, and then Jack, you do one about The Amazing Race with my mom, your wife,
exactly,
Cindy. And you guys do a Downton Abbey podcast.
Downton
well.
Abbey, and we're also going to do Billions, a show with Damian Lewis and Paul Giamatti and thousands of other people.
Nice. What is it on, like Stars or something like that?
It's on Showtime.
And then you have Sports Talk with Three Stupid Guys, Walking Dead with Three Stupid Guys, The Married Man Show with Jack and Dale and myself. That's always a blast, but just realize that is an explicit show.
And it's like right out the bat too.
Yeah, gradually become more and more obscene.
It's like 2 seconds into it, bam. Not that we're not trying to be. It's not the shock value. It just, I think Dale brings out the worst in us.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Also, if you're on Twitter, I've been challenged by Jay to get Jimmy Kimmel on the show. He doesn't think I can get Jimmy Kimmel to do the Lost Podcast.
I think your hashtag needs to have our name in it, because if people use the hashtag, Jimmy Kimmel's not going to know that, hey, I should do a podcast with Jay and Jack.
But the original tweet's from us, though.
Yeah, but so if they're tweeting it and they put a hashtag, the hashtag.
Still Talking Lost.
So I would say Still Talking Lost or Talk Lost with Jay and Jack. I think
only have 140 characters. It's not like
it's tough.
It's not like Twitter. You can write a novel.
But
just today, I had to get the hashtag, and I go, like,
what happens if Jimmy sees just the hashtag and he's like, okay, I'll still talk Lost. How just on my show? Okay. No.
Well, now you're offering advice. I asked you 3 weeks ago what the hashtags be. You're like, well, I don't know what it could be. It's just he's not going to talk to us anyway. It doesn't matter.
Anywho, that's just
what he said. He told Matthew Fox, this is what gave me the idea, he still talks to someone about Lost once a week. Why not talk to all the fans of Lost?
I agree. Listen, Lost. I support you.
In fact, he could do that, and he wouldn't have talked to Lost about Lost for a year. He'd just get it all out of his system.
I agree.
And these podcasts, like you just heard, this one was great. 4 episodes of people, some would say, are not the greatest episodes ever. I would disagree, but some hate some of these episodes. But I thought it was a great podcast. We talked. We had some theories. We had some great conversation, some great memories. So come on, Jimmy. So if you see the tweet, I'll come up. What if I went Jay and Jay talk, hashtag Jay and Jay talk loss with us? Or
no, Jay and Jack. Yes and no. It's Jay and Jack.
Well, Jay and Jack, it's like, and then talk. It's like 500. That would be the tweet itself.
I'm just saying. You can talk among your constituents. This is your, it's, hey, you have to try and get them. I'm just giving some advice.
Well, each week I'm getting more help from everybody.
A nickel's worth of free advice.
And I appreciate the help, but if I get everybody that follows us on Twitter, it's Jimmy Kimmel Tuesday is what I'm calling it. Every Tuesday I'm going to bug Jimmy Kimmel to get him on the podcast. And I'm not going to stop. I'm going to keep going every week until everybody either unfollows us or...
No, don't. Please, we need the followers, so please don't do that.
Well, if people, you know, I'm not going to... I don't bend to the pressure.
All right.
If only one person is following us and that only person is tweeting it. I mean, you don't even retweet it for me.
I forgot it was today. I have a job and a wife and kids.
Well, that's great. It takes 2 seconds.
I will try to make sure I do it next time.
What do you mean try? You can still do it today. It's still Tuesday.
It's too late now. It's getting close to bedtime.
Why do you hate Jimmy Kimmel?
I love Jimmy Kimmel. It'd be great to have him on.
And why don't you want to talk to him?
Oh, man. All right. Well, that is it for this week.
Because he doesn't like John Locke either. I'd be interested to see if he likes John Locke or not.
Well, we'll have to see. All right, guys. We'll see you next time. We do have another guest lineup for our Lost podcast. We're recording that in early December. I don't know if we're ready to announce the name yet, but another...
it's
well-known...
Jimmy Kimmel.
It's not Jimmy Kimmel, but it's a well-known podcaster. Also
Jimmy Kimmel.
Does he or she?
I don't know.
But anywho, so that should be a lot of fun. Again, check out all the other shows. And until next time, hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.